Welcome to The Weekly Green, a KXCI mini-program on environmental issues from southern Arizona and the rest of the universe. Today we're going to talk about restoration with David Seibert, the Executive Director of Borderlands Restoration.
Welcome, David. Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me.
What is Borderlands Restoration's primary mission?
Our mission started in 2012 in Patagonia, Arizona, where a number of scientists and practitioners and committed people in the community came together to try to address a number of different ecosystem and social issues all at the same time. And those involve paying strict attention to ecosystem processes such as erosion control and soil stability, getting plants back into the landscape that support pollinators that are in peril in the United States by collecting seeds, growing out plants, and get them planted back into the landscape, and then connecting people to this work by creating training opportunities and jobs, hopefully, around this so that we can foment and participate in what we're calling a restoration economy, which is not a new idea, but it's one that we really firmly believe in because we think that there's a strong chance, given all the threats that we face in the world today and in southern Arizona with drought and maybe changing fire regimes, this might be an opportunity for people to actually be paid and to be supported in taking care of the places that they live through a combination of grants and contracts, philanthropy. We would really like what we do, which is very similar to what a lot of other organizations do, such as Sky Island Alliance and Gila Watershed Partnership, Watershed Management Group. We would like to make this just a matter or a way of doing business for the United States, Arizona, and all other states. We would like it to be part of a normal way of doing our work within the landscape, inhabiting the landscape, and taking care of it in the same way that we take care of bridges and roads and other things so that the ecosystem, the plants and the animals and the people that depend on them, including water supplies and such, are supported in that way as part of the infrastructure of the United States.
You want it to be included in the federal budget as a part of the infrastructure, like the highways.
There are always grants available at state levels and from Arizona Game and Fish and from the U.S. Forest Service, the Park Service. These are some of our strongest partners. But it's always a struggle to try to get the grants. And as any small business or nonprofit knows, you just can't give up the search for monies. We're okay with that, and everyone needs to be okay with that. But it would be nice if there were some security so that people knew that there would be money to take care of our soils, our organic matter, our plants, and all of the what are called ecosystem services that people depend on for food production and for landscape health into the future.
Your main interest is to restore the watershed as it was, say, 100 years ago.
No, not at all. That's a common misconception and one that restoration practitioners try to get away from because there really is no interest and no point in trying to recover some kind of bygone era because climate regimes have changed, land use has changed. There's been degradation that's been, in some cases, caused by humans, in some cases caused by natural processes such as fires that are behaving differently than ever in our history. What we want to do is reconnect ecosystem processes, stop degradation on the land, and not necessarily to recover any bygone age or bygone condition, but to stabilize systems so that plants can reproduce, soils can stay intact, organic matter can stay on the landscape, and people can have a hand in this kind of work and then reap the benefits of it so that they can grow food in a more stable environment and not be at risk for how to grow their food or whether or not they're going to be pollinators to pollinate their food crops.
You have had some remarkable successes, some of them across the border.
We have, yeah, and we're trying to get a lot more of those. We've got partners who have been doing this work for decades, such as Cuenca Los Ojos Foundation, Sky Island Alliance has been very busy across the border, and those are some of our strongest partners. Some of these people have been around for about 25 years, and we've only been around for four, although we've worked with these organizations as individuals a number of times. But we think one of the keys to our potential success is not to compete with such organizations, but to work with them, to diversify, to let everybody play to their strengths, whether they're a small, limited profit company like Borderlands Restoration, 25-year-old nonprofit organization such as Skyland Alliance, Cuenca Los Ojos Family Foundation, the Biophilia Foundation is one of our strongest supporters. So we hope that everybody can play to their strengths, and instead of competing for funds, as often has to be the case when you're applying for grants and contracts, we pool our resources and let everybody play to their strengths, and possibly even in the nuts and bolts area of this work, have shared administrative services across the board so that people can worry less about holding down an office and paying the rent, share those services so that we can focus more on our shared work and share the load, because there's plenty of work to do. We often think that it's just a matter of organizing that work. We feel that all the parts are on the table and they just need to be arranged in a more efficient way. And it would be much more inspiring and more secure for all of us if we could pool our resources and, as I said, play to our strengths and keep everyone together in business rather than compete and potentially have some of our smaller partners go out of business.
You involve some very special groups in your volunteer work, which is not actually volunteering. You do pay.
We do, people. Yes. Yeah. We have a staff of about 12 people right now, a mix of full-time and part-time. We rely heavily on volunteers, as almost any of our sister and partner organizations would tell you. But the idea is to actually create jobs around this work so that people feel like they can get the training that they need, hopefully through our organization and our sister organizations, learn the skills, and be able to move into doing this kind of work as a profession. And of course, that happens a lot already in universities and colleges all over the country, where people get training in environmental science and forestry, and they go to work for the Forest Service or the Park Service. We need that, certainly. But there's a place for the private sector to help public entities, public agencies achieve their goals on the land. When we hear entities like the Forest Service and the Park Service and others express a desire to support rural communities, rural economies, to train young people in small towns like Patagonia and Douglas, we would like to be the ones, along with our partners, to stand up and say, we're the ones who can help you achieve those goals. Because the Forest Service alone, the Park Service alone, clearly don't have the funding to get this kind of work done, and maybe not the expertise, and maybe not the tenacity and the spirit that we have. We're a lot more freewheeling and committed in many ways, and not structured or held back by boundaries, for example, of where one piece of property ends and another one begins. We're very effective at crossing boundaries between forests and private land, between parks and state land, hopefully, as I said, over the U.S.-Mexico border. This is one of our proudest times and efforts right now, is to try to offer something back against some of the more harsh current realities of the border and the idea that these things might get worse in terms of sharing of cultures and sharing of ideas, not to mention sharing and movement of wildlife and waters across the border. We would like to offer something back as an alternative and show people that they can actually have jobs working in this arena.
You work with some special groups, youths and prison inmates.
There was a couple of instances where we worked with inmates at the beginning of our program, when we had a summer-long effort to build rock structures and increase moisture on the land to reduce the harmful degradation caused by a ravaging fire that went through the Chiricahua Mountains. We get the inmates out there and we connect them to the work very, very deliberately. We make sure that they know that they're not just being treated as tools, they're part of our team, even if it's only temporary. They're not just doing busy work. They're doing work that actually makes a difference on the ground. And they're going to be treated with respect, and we have high expectations of them. We knew right from the beginning that that changed their minds a little bit, because they possibly weren't treated with such respect and maybe weren't engaged or given the opportunity to connect with the ground, connect with the land, and to connect with meaningful work. In this case, there was a lot of skepticism at first, but pretty soon, as we started to build structures, the men started to take great pride in the quality of their work. And sure enough, after it rained a few times, the men came out and they saw that sediment and organics and moisture had backed up behind the structures that they had built with their bare hands. They were competing with one another and laughing about what they had done, and they were cheering and hooting and hollering and giving each other a hard time about what a good job that they had done on the land. They ended up being very, very proud of what they had done. And again, I think it was just a matter of giving people an opportunity to engage with an ecosystem and to show them that what they were doing really, really did make a difference. Soon they were coming out every day and they were very excited to go see how their work had performed after a big rain. They wanted to see that it had done well. That was remarkable.
In addition to the practical fieldwork that you do, you also have instruction programs.
Yes, we're just starting the Borderlands Restoration Leadership Institute, which is at borderlandsinstitute.org. This is an effort that was funded by the Biophilia Foundation in response to our 5 years of work on the ground, and especially because of the work that we've done with youth in the Patagonia High School and at the Douglas High School. They liked our work so much in Patagonia that they funded an entire youth program for the summer, and we'll be in our second year in Douglas now this year. The key there is not just to get work done on the ground and then to move on to the next site, but to actually engage people, to show them why what they're doing matters, and to connect the dots across the spectrum of soils, hydrology, fire effects, vegetation that's being compromised, plants that are dropping out of the system. We want to show people that they have opportunities to really make a difference with their hands on the ground, to take care of all of these different ecosystem parts without letting one of them drop out, because they are all integrated.
If I were interested in participating in one of these learning programs, how would I go about it?
You can look at borderlandsrestoration.org or borderlandsinstitute.org to key into some of our volunteer opportunities. Many of those are in coordination with some of our partners here in Tucson and elsewhere. We'll have a flagship course that we'll be running this summer that will go 6 weeks. It will cover all of the different aspects of restoration that we tend to: ecosystem processes, plants, horticulture, getting plants back in the ground, and then social justice components involving the issues on the border and how we think that attention to place and attention to taking care of place might might be one part of the answer to some of the more negative effects of work on the border. As one example we're thinking about in a creative sense is with the difficulties of people potentially traveling back and forth across the border, we wonder out loud if it might be a chance for us to do simultaneous restoration work where we organize projects on the U.S. side of the border, we organize projects on the Mexican side of the border, and we do those projects on the same day at the same time so that we each know that the other is hard at work trying to take care of the places where they live, even if they can't cross the border. So we wonder if this might be something of a response to having a border wall there where we can almost forget that it exists for just a little while and then tend to it in other ways.
There is already a considerable length of wall up. Does it hamper your work?
It doesn't right now. It hampers the work of the species on behalf of which we work, the animals, the water, plant migrations, that kind of thing. People on the U.S. side of the border have a much easier time moving back and forth, and we hope to take advantage of that privilege, frankly, so that we can get across on the other side, train Mexican communities. We've got a couple of grants right now to do work on rivers in Mexico, and we're working hard with the Border 2020 program to try to get some of our U.S. practitioners over to Mexico to train people in how to build their own greenhouses, build their own systems, so that they can get to work taking care of mine spills and degraded landscapes right alongside us just on the other side of the border.
Your main sponsor is the Biophilia Foundation. Could you tell me something about them?
The Biophilia Foundation is a relatively recent sponsor. They're the main sponsor for the Borderlands Restoration Leadership Institute because they saw an opportunity to support us not only doing the actual ecosystem work on the ground day in and day out, but to turn our actual live restoration projects into learning opportunities as opposed to just having people learn about the techniques and the processes in classrooms. So we're going to teach our work through active projects, which will include everything from bookkeeping and accounting to project planning, budget management, design of projects, and then execution of those projects on active projects. So every student that comes to us will be contributing to an active project in a watershed, whether it's in Patagonia or in the Chiricahua Mountains or another range. Our work would be less abstract that way, I think. Again, as we did with the inmates, we'll give people a chance to really engage in actual projects, not model projects and not abstract projects, but actual projects that are ongoing and need help so people can learn by doing.
In addition to people to do the digging and logging of boulders and everything else that's involved, you're also looking for special skills people.
Yeah, certainly we are. That's one of the most interesting things that's come about in our work. We'll get people like our current bookkeeper and our accountant. They will tell us with laughter that they're not very interested in getting out on the ground and lugging boulders around and such. They want to be a bookkeeper, but they want to be a bookkeeper for us. They want to be a bookkeeper for an organization that has our spirit and our heart and is engaged in the we're doing. So there's room for all kinds of people, including lawyers and all the rest, to have a part in keeping an organization strong and just making our work more effective on the ground day in and day out.
On your site, you mentioned that you have an innovative approach. What kind of innovations have you come up with?
Well, so far, the innovations sort of pick up on what a lot of our mentors from the past, the techniques that they use on the ground in terms of trying to heal waterways or get plants to survive on the ground. We build on that by experimenting with techniques, and we've gotten a couple of agencies, such as the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality and the Biophilia Foundation, to support the techniques that we have going already, but to test them and to maybe meld the techniques, take two or three of the techniques on the ground together so that potentially, say, digging a small trench on contour and filling it with rocks as opposed to just building rock structures or just digging a trench. We wonder if by combining these techniques in an innovative way that we can, for example, increase groundwater recharge for human beings to pump back out, improve the flows of streams, improve surface water for plants and animals, and improve the moisture levels so that we get better germination of native plants.
You get asked a lot to do your work after wildfires.
We do, yes. In Arizona, in the southwestern U.S., we typically get very, very hot summers, wildfires that are quickly followed by monsoon rains that really have a negative effect on landscapes. Crews are often called in post-fire, and the pattern has often been to drop seed and drop mulch. The seeds often don't germinate. A lot of them wash away. We'd like to be sort of a hotshot crew that is on call, able to respond very quickly to fire damage with a stable seed bank before any more damage is done by erosion.
Thank you very much, David, and good luck.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to speak to you. We appreciate it.